I had a great conversation with Adam Trawick of Amegy Bank in Houston, Texas. As a banker, Adam was able to give us more of a layperson's perspective of the IC disc and how they use it as a potential differentiator when they're talking to potential clients. And lastly, we talked about from a technical perspective of different ways that a bank can structure the client's loan documents and loan covenants to encompass the IC disc. Wide-ranging interview, and really enjoyed talking to Adam. I think you'll find him to be a very bright bit, very down-to-earth. I hope you enjoy the interview. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Dave.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. Well, thank you for joining me on the IC Disc Show. And we are live and recording.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, just to give a little overview, Adam Trawick is, are you Senior VP now?
Senior Vice President, yes.
Senior Vice President at Amegy Bank of Texas. And so we're going to learn a little more about his background and get kind of a banker's perspective of the IC disc. So why don't we start at the beginning? Where are you from?
So I like to say all over Texas, and what that really is a nice way of saying is a bunch of small towns all over Texas. I'd say the most of the time kind of right outside of Houston, in a small town, East Bernard, but close enough to Houston to still feel like I could be part of the city.
Okay. That's excellent. And so you went to high school there in East Bernard?
High school, East Bernard. And then after high school, ended up at Rice University in Houston and got an economics degree from Rice.
And I understand you were a fireball throwing fastball pitcher. Is that correct? On the baseball team?
Well, pitcher and baseball team out of that sentence. Yeah, that's correct. The fireball part of it. Less so, I was a little soft tossing left-handed pitcher, but I really enjoyed my time there and had a ton of great experiences. Made a lot of really good and lifelong friends from my time on the team, and we had a lot of fun and a lot of good guys and great coaches too.
That's great. That is great. So then you graduated from there and then you went straight to Amegy. Is that correct?
Straight to Amegy. Yes. I've been there ever since. So,
and that's 10, 12 years ago. How long have you been at Amegy?
Almost 13.
Okay. And, go ahead.
I was going to say I started in the officer training program. The bank has a developmental program for college grads that they hire a couple times a year for. And being like many 22 and 23 year olds right out of college, I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do. But I think looking back, it turns out I don't know that I really had any clue what I really wanted to do at the time.
Sure. But so why did you pick Amegy? Was it because of the officer development program that drew you to the bank, or are there other things?
It was the chance to go somewhere and be trained and given a skill set and some exposure to different industries and to finance at a deeper level was really appealing. But also the interview process was really enjoyable. I get to meet with some really senior people around the bank and really get a great feel for the culture and how they approach banking and business, and just there were multiple components of that that just really rang true and joined them, and I'm so glad I did. I'm not sure if I got lucky or if I was all that insightful or what, but I it's been a great run.
Oh, that is great. And I guess as the kind of circle of life goes, I think in the last few years, haven't you been involved in that program more in the mentor or instructor level?
Very much more so. It's something that the bank believes strongly in, is engaging a lot of the young bankers in the recruiting effort. And that can mean anything from on-campus interviews to showing interns and potential candidates around the bank when they've come for their interview days, all the way to decision committees and working with our HR partners and getting offers out, and with our college recruiting team getting offers out to the various candidates. But yeah, I've had a little bit more of a leadership role over the last couple of years, and that's been a lot of fun, really rewarding. I make this comment every year. I look at the candidates that we hire and just how sharp they are and how well prepared they are to enter the job market in so many ways. And kind of joke with some of my colleagues and say, man, I'm glad I'm not competing against them for as a fellow potential banker, because I don't know that I'd get hired today.
Well, that's it's good you got in when you did.
Absolutely.
So you're title of senior vice president, but what does that translate to? What's your current role at the bank? What do you do? Do you manage a team? Tell me about that.
I do, and so I love the term player coach. It applies in so many ways. I think kind of old school baseball, there were people that were player coaches up until the 40s and 50s, 1940s and 50s in baseball, and not so much anymore in baseball, but in the job force, very much player coach. I think being able to be a player coach really helps keep your perspective grounded in some of the day-to-day challenges and some of the real work going on at a level, either one or two levels kind of junior to you, and that's a good tool to use in how you manage your team. And so I get the privilege of working with a team of about eight here outside of the officer training program, and these are real life bankers and support staff, and we have an experience level really across the board. We've got 2-year bankers on my team, and we've got 35 and 40 year bankers on my team, and some really talented people. The fun part about the team is there's such a diverse skill set and diverse experience background among that range. That really brings a lot of unique perspective to how we tackle problems for customers on a daily basis.
Yeah, no, I've seen that firsthand. I mean, in the interest of full disclosure, I've been a customer of the banks for several decades, so I am certainly familiar with that team work approach to customer service.
And we appreciate your business.
Well, you're welcome. What do you most like about being a banker?
I think every day I'm amazed by the entrepreneurial minds in our state, in our city, in our country, and how so many people come up with unique ways to solve problems and start a business to do just that. And I guess that description maybe sounds a little technology and intellectual property focused, and it's really not. It can be it could be as simple as a dirt contractor and somebody who pushes dirt around with heavy equipment for a living, all the way to some really really intricate manufacturing processes and everything in between. So it's so cool to be able to work with company owners and privately held companies to help them grow, to help them impact more families, to help them achieve the kind of the lifestyle and the goals that they have set out for in their lives, and that's just super rewarding.
Yeah, I know the feeling, and I've seen that firsthand with clients of ours that I've introduced you to. That enthusiasm you have of working with those entrepreneurs. Hey, while I think of it, because our listeners are not all in the Houston area, so Amogee Bank of Texas is a bank that's based, the headquarters are in Houston, Texas, but it's part of a larger banking organization, Zion Bank Corp. Is that correct, Adam?
That's Zion's right. Zion's Bank Corporation out of Salt Lake City, Utah, and Amogee is one of about seven affiliate banks. We all fall under Zion's, but we have a decentralized model in so many ways, and so have different flags under the kind of the western states. Texas and Amogee are the farthest east, and so kind of Texas and east is really the footprint all the way through New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, Utah, Nevada, California, a little bit in Idaho, and Washington, Oregon. So the bulk of the headcount and the kind of the lending assets are in California, Texas, and Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay, and you're based in Houston.
Yes, yeah, that's correct.
Yep, I just realized I was remiss there. So, since this is the IC Disc show, I guess we need to talk some IC Disc. And so we've got about 30 minutes left. So I'll turn it over to you. Can you take 30 minutes to share all the knowledge you have of IC Disc? I'm just kidding.
2 minutes sounds better.
Okay. You know, given that you're not a CPA, how do you describe the IC Disc, like, to your customers and potential customers, you know, as a banker, you know, which is more of a higher level overview, but how do you typically describe it to folks?
So I'll start off first in a little different way before I get to the description. I start off with a question. I think it's important as a banker to understand the revenue mix of particular clients and kind of where revenue comes from, where their customer comes from, and if they're making a product or performing a service, where the product is going or where the service is coming from. And if at any point along that line of discovery we uncover a good or service that has an international component to it, whether they're selling directly to the international market or international companies or not, we immediately know to consider the IC Disc as a potential tool for them to use to gain some tax advantages that they might otherwise not be able to. And I think the description of an IC Disc is simple. So whenever we do identify an opportunity or are asking that question, we refer to the disc by name, and then if they ask for more, we say, well, look, it's an export tax incentive program that has really been around a long time through the IRS tax code. Many CPA firms, specialty tax advising firms, use that product and various forms or functions. It is it's a product that's not meant for every situation, but if it does fit your particular situation, it's really a great benefit from a tax strategy standpoint in taking advantage of a longstanding tax program.
Okay, well, that's a nice succinct way to describe it. So what, in your experience, other than the, some export revenue threshold, what types of companies have you seen that it works best for? Does it, is there a particular ownership structure you see, or, kind of a mindset of the owner, or who does it seem like it's works best for?
Well, I'd say certainly privately held companies, and maybe that's not exclusive, but I think predominantly what we see is privately held companies where, and a lot of times that's single owner. I think I can think of a couple of situations offhand where it's not single owner, but predominantly single owner. And generally, it's an owner that has a creative mindset, for lack of a better term. They can see the value in executing a unique strategy and really want to go and pursue something that is new and that they may have not heard about from their CPA and their trusted advisor, who may be with a firm that may or may not provide the service. So I think that type of situation. Other than that, I think there's a pretty wide net of companies and kind of different personalities and type of individuals that can that we've seen be open and willing to use the DISC.
Okay. But it certainly helps if the owner, has a creative mindset or an outside the box mindset to even be willing to entertain, a novel idea. Is that right?
Absolutely. And that's kind of back to the entrepreneur mindset. I think those two go hand in hand.
Now that makes sense. And that's been my experience as well. So how do you, strategically incorporate the DISC into your service offerings? And I guess before you answer that, I know that the bank strategy is to try to add value to their customers, whether it's a product that they offer or not. Is that accurate?
That's right. I will say.
So there's a lot of recommendations or introductions you all will make, right?
That's accurate. We're in business to be able to help our customers solve problems, kind of no matter what that problem is. And so we're not doing our job as bankers if we don't understand ancillary product offerings from a variety of sources out there, whether that be tax advice or M&A advice or insurance advice, and the list goes on. But I think that's part of the job of a banker, is to understand where they can help a client who might be experiencing a problem.
Okay, that's perfect. And so that, I'm guessing, that creative mindset you talk about is not really just for the DISC, but really for any other ways you can help them, right? You can't help somebody who doesn't want your help.
That's right. Or I guess maybe a different way to say it is, you can't uncover opportunities to help unless you ask the right questions.
Okay. Yeah, excellent point. Excellent point. Okay.
But I think, Dave, back, I think to your original question around just, how we incorporate the IC DISC into our service offerings, it's really easy. It's about asking that question. So back to the original exploration, we're meeting with a potential client of the bank or an actual client of the bank. We really try to understand their business in a variety of aspects, and that includes their sources of revenue and their customer base. And if it feels like an opportunity for IC Disk, I'm not an IC Disk expert by any means, and my 2-minute explanation doesn't go very far. And so it's really about getting the right person, the right team, and the right group of people involved to consider whether the disk makes sense for that individual company. But I think as far as how we use it to differentiate ourselves, we structure an offering whenever we come in and we talk about a loan or deposit or some other product or service that the bank's going to offer. We look for other ways to make a relational difference with that company. And if that means introducing them to someone who's outside the bank where the bank doesn't make any money off of a particular introduction, well, that's okay. It's good for the client, and hopefully they kind of see how we do business and that we have interests that align with them being more successful, and that incentivizes them to come and consider us as a banking partner long term. And in fact, I can think of a one situation earlier in my career where we were looking at moving a particular company over from another lending institution, and said lending institution it was one of the mega banks, and their loan pricing was just incredibly cheap. They weren't charging any fees, and so we were having a hard time creating an economic incentive for the company to move. And they said, "Well, hey, we like you guys, but you're not showing us any value outside of kind of a relationship based approach." And while there is value there, we need to have a good reason economically too. And so we said, "Well, okay, let's take a creative approach." And as we dove into the data, and we understood it appeared to be a nice IC Disk opportunity. And so we, thanks to you and your firm, Dave, for answering some silly questions, we ended up introducing them to you guys, and y'all made us look like heroes, and Export Tax Advisors and you really made us look good. And so they in many ways gave us credit for some tax savings that you helped them achieve. So thanks for that.
Well, hey, that's okay. So did they end up becoming a customer then?
They did. They've become a customer, and they've been a good long-term loyal customer for about 8 or 9 years now. And I think, you know, the money that client has paid to us in interest expense and bank fees and other things over the past 8 or 9 years, it's been offset tenfold by the savings that they've achieved through their IC Disk. So they really look at us fondly.
That is awesome. So does that mean they don't beat you up on 20 basis points every chance they get?
That's right. They have a little more tolerance for our desire and need to make money as a bank, and don't fight us over 20 basis points.
Awesome. That is awesome. So you had mentioned earlier that, you know, that there's a number of ways that you seek to help your clients, you know, aside from non-banking things, such as, you know, tax incentives in general, you know, be it the IC Disk or some other incentive, you know, insurance, you know, other things. So I'm just curious, what do you look for in a firm in general that if you were looking to refer some non-banking services to, what matters to you, or what do you look for? Is it, you know, their how fancy their offices are, how many years they've been doing it, how pleasant they are to work with, how responsive they are. What do you use as your criteria to kind of choose those partners?
Well, certainly all of the aspects that you mentioned,
are important and I think can factor into the equation. But I think one word and one idea really rises above the rest, and that's trust.
Okay.
And I'd say especially in the situation that I just described, I was a young banker at the time and fairly inexperienced, but I had developed a high degree of trust in a potential business partner. And so being able to, with confidence, introduce someone who is outside of the bank, a third party service provider, and say, hey, I think these guys or this group of people or this lady is going to be good to know and can help you with your business, with confidence makes all the difference in the world. And I don't know at what point relationships reach that. It's more of a feel than a kind of a checklist that you hit or a particular inflection point. But whenever that feeling of trust is reached, I think that's what makes that third party non-banking kind of service provider really elevate themselves to someone I want to introduce to clients, friends, prospective clients, et cetera. But I think some of the other items that you mentioned as well, are they good to work with? Well, yes, that's hugely important. That speaks to the level of confidence and their ability to execute, which if they can execute for me, well, then I feel confident they can execute for my client. And then the amount of experience they have, I think that goes without saying that somebody that has seen almost everything out there really can add value at a level where someone who has, you know, 3 to 5 years of experience just never will be able to.
No, that makes sense. And yeah, because I guess at the end of the day, when you make an introduction to somebody, it's you're putting your reputation on the line every time, aren't you?
That's right. And I think there's two ways to learn that lesson. There's the hard way, especially when you're young and inexperienced. Although I guess you can learn that same lesson when you have 30 years of experience too. But you certainly are putting your reputation on the line, and you have to be careful with that and thoughtful with it.
Yeah. Yep. I know that from our businesses and introductions we make as well. We have a similar philosophy as the bank in that, you know, we just do one thing, you know, the IC disc, but there's lots of ways that our clients can benefit from people we know. So we're, I know that feeling of putting your own reputation on the line. So what I'd like to do now is change gears a little bit and get a little bit into the banking nitty gritty of IC Disc. And the reason I ask this is that so many times when we have a new client that comes on board, probably only 5% of the time the client comes to us from a banker referral. It's mostly an existing client and then followed by probably their CPA firm is kind of the next biggest source of new clients. But an interesting thing happens, so for the 95% of the time that the bankers didn't introduce us, at some point in the first few months, we invariably get a call from the banker who has a little to no IC Disc experience and we need to help him out. And I don't say that with any negativity or criticism, because it's just a very, niche part of the tax code. And I always tell the bankers, you know, they feel kind of bad because they feel like they should know about this. And I try to convey to them that they shouldn't. And most bankers don't. And, but since you've had some experience for a number of years with IC Disc and with your clients, I'd kind of like to talk about like loan structure, deal structure, for the, you know, the different types of IC disk. And honestly, I'm asking this because I myself don't really fully understand it. Cause you know, these bankers will call, they'll ask me some questions. I think I know the direction they're going, but I never really know kind of for sure how they're looking at the IC disk. So that's what I'd kind of like to talk about. So let's just start with like a flow-through corporation, an S-Corp or LLC or partnership that has an IC disk, and that typically that the operating company owns the IC disk. What will you all do for loan structure, loan covenants to kind of factor in the fact that they have an IC disk? And then I'm going to contrast that with a C corporation where the individual shareholders own the disk, and maybe kind of contrast if you handle those the same or if you handle them differently.
Well, Dave, there's no question that that the mechanics and some of the different structural considerations for an IC disk can impact how loan structuring can work within the context of the disk. Happy to try to kind of walk through that and how we've looked at it in the past. I actually think it's easier to start with the with that flow through corporation where the shareholders own the disk, and because it's the problems are, I think, more they're more clear, and the solutions are a little more clear. But first, just a couple of comments. I think it took us a period of time to get comfortable with the mechanics and how to craft covenants and flow of funds, and then also how to really set expectations and communicate with the owner of the company around kind of a structure that we could both the bank and the owner could be good with, and then still met kind of IC disk requirements. So, you know, just
okay.
Probably the bigger piece was understanding and communication. To your point, you know, bankers aren't IC disk or tax experts in any way, and so, you know, those two components have their challenges. So back to kind of the disk structure, I think the two main components that get impacted in a banker's view on a disk are things that are really important to us because we care. Generally, we're loaning money to that company. Otherwise, you don't have the banker involved.
Sure.
And so if you're loaning money to the company, you likely care about cash flow and things that impact cash flow, and capital structure and things that impact capital structure. So,
okay.
So to address both of those points, cash flow, you when the disk is active and there are disk commissions being paid out to that other disk entity, there's a reduction in perceived cash flow by all standard definitions. And so one thought is to amend the definition of cash flow to capture commissions being paid to the disk. And you can do it very simply in naming those disk commissions, or you can do it in a slightly more complicated way where the shareholder is contributing back the excess disk commissions over their individual tax liability to the company and capture the delta there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a fairly similar concept around that contribution back to the operating company from the shareholder, that's frequently done in the form of sub debt. And so the bank would need to contemplate subordination of that debt or subordination of those funds that are coming back into the company from the shareholder, kind of what form they're going to take, if it truly will be kind of a debt form with a note formalized, or if it's really more of equity. And so the owner's willingness to subordinate that debt, if it is in fact debt, is a component of that too. And so that's part of that's the discussion and the communication piece that I referenced earlier.
Okay. That makes sense. I was familiar with the, with some of that, but like amending the definition of cash flow, I hadn't heard of that approach, but it makes perfect sense. It's like you're trying to normalize the cash flow, kind of like when a company's looking to sell, they'll, kind of normalize the cash flow by adding back, like owner perks and such that, like a large corporate buyer wouldn't be paying. So it seems like that's a kind of a similar approach to sort of normalize the cash flow. Did I understand that correctly?
Absolutely. That's 100% right. It's really an expense that's controllable to the point where it could really be turned off if needed to at some point to provide that additional cash flow. In our view, the overall picture of cash flow isn't really changing, but the presentation of it might be. So that's how we look at it. Well,
that makes sense. And then I'm guessing then that the other situation we see frequently that would have to be easier is when you have a flow-through corporation like an S-Corp where the flow-through corporation itself owns the disc. So that the disc is effectively just a wholly owned sub of the operating company. And so that the commission gets paid to the disc, but then the disc returns the money immediately to the company as dividend income. I'm guessing that's easier to get comfortable with. Is that a fair assumption?
It is, with the assumption that you've got accounting presentation that's accurate and a large enough and hopefully sophisticated enough accounting firm to document and explain that in the notes to the financial statements every year. I think that's where there is frequently confusion is company prepared financial statements may present the information accurately, but when there's not those added notes, there is bankers are going to ask questions. So we would do the same thing in many of those positions, to make sure we understand.
Okay. That makes sense. So it's in the, you need to make sure that the financials, appropriately reflect that, that structure and the timing and the receipt of the dividend income by the operating company.
That's accurate. I think we see, and Dave, you're any clients that you've ever had experience with in the world of IC Disc, I think we've seen companies that are really nice size, larger middle market privately held companies, $200-$400 million a year in revenue. And sophisticated internal accounting and financial reporting capabilities, have good, well-known and well-respected CPA firms doing audited financial statements every year that follow GAAP guidelines. And then kind of on the smaller end of that, you have kind of really small businesses down in the $10-$15 million a year revenue space that maybe feel a little more mom and pop. They're frequently great companies and really well run and doing high margin work, but they have maybe a little less a little less controls, a little less documentation, and really at that size, they're likely with a smaller CPA firm with and not required to produce audited financial statements, which is fine. We see that too. Just the information is less available and apparent in those situations.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, but probably 3/4 of our ICDIS clients don't borrow money. So, and it's one of the reasons that, that oftentimes so that does two things. One is if they're not borrowing money, I'm probably not thinking about, an introduction to another banker because, without borrowing money, they're just not as, seem as compelling of a customer. But the other thing that does is it seems like many of our clients are the largest client of their CPA firm. We have clients that, have $100 million a year of revenue, $5, $6, $7, $8 million of taxable income. And their CPA firm is a tax guy working out of the spare bedroom of his house. And, but it's because they don't borrow money. There's not a bank requiring, audited or reviewed financial statements. And all they use the CPA for is just preparing the corporate and individual tax returns.
Well, I'd say we see lots of customers that fit that profile. And Dave, I know you may not, you pay more attention to ICDISC and IRS tax code changes, but in the banking world, deposits are sexy again these days.
Oh, are they? Okay. That's good to know. Now that interest rates are above zero, they're more, deposits are more attractive.
That's right. There's a reason they're above zero. It's supply and demand. You've got many banks out there who are seeking to grow their deposit base and fund their loan growth with the cheapest cost capital available, and that's generally demand deposits from operating accounts for many of these companies. So if you notice any of your customers not generating some level of return on their cash balances, they should be talking to their bank or a new bank.
That's thank you for that. That is really good to know. I guess I've kind of just gotten lulled into a sense of complacency that that banks don't care about deposits, and of course, I don't think any bank ever said we don't care about deposits, but there was a sense that I would receive from banks, not just Amogee, but others, 4, 5, 6 years ago, that deposits weren't as sexy as loaning money.
Well, you read the tea leaves 100% correctly on that. I think rates were so low for so long and that most bankers didn't want to talk about deposit rates because there was nothing to talk about. So the wind shifted.
Okay, well that is good to know. So so clients that have substantial deposit balances, they should actually be making some money on that, is what I think I hear you saying.
They should, and I'm not a rate expert, and nor am I licensed to really talk about specific rates. But I know the last check I saw as of this morning, many of your overnight rates were anywhere between kind of 1 and 2 to slightly above 2%, just depending on what those balances were in. And of course, I'm referring to kind of larger dollar clients that have excess cash to sweep into accounts to earn interest.
Okay. Well, that is very good to know. So I'm just making a note of that. So deposits are sexy. That's a good thing to know.
That's a great title.
Yeah, deposits are sexy. So I guess as we're kind of nearing the end here, is there I want to just talk, we kind of touched on it a little bit, but as far as the type of clients that, that you and the bank are best able to serve, I'd like to talk just a bit more about what the characteristics are of the client you can most help. The example you gave earlier, you were talking about that the your customer was with one of the mega banks. They had great rates. You couldn't really match the rates and you know, some of the fees and stuff that, that they were, you know, waiving or reducing, that made it really difficult for you to compete kind of on just pure price. So is that still kind of the case that you know, competing on price is because I guess there's always somebody willing to do something cheaper, right? And so how do you, so with that in mind, what are the characteristics you look for where you really can help a company?
Well, you're right. It is hard to compete solely on price at times, and it's generally not a great position to be in because of the point you illustrated. There's depending on the time, there's always somebody willing to be cheaper, and so I think where we do get really aggressive on price, and actually in that prior situation, we matched price, but we weren't going to let it be a race to the bottom. We wanted to show that we could provide some value in other ways, and that was a more meaningful discussion with the client. So that's kind of where we focused our efforts. And I'd say in looking at existing clients and potential clients of Amagi, we largely focus our efforts on privately held, and which means in many cases family-owned businesses. And the core of the bank was really built on businesses, you know, 10 million to 500 million in revenue. And that's a pretty wide swath. Depending on who you talk to, that's defined as middle market companies or lower middle market companies, if you're talking to a big bank. But we really like that sweet spot. That's how the bank was really built. And then over the years, we added on ancillary service offerings to take care of the needs that companies and company owners ran across in that space. We've got to be able to serve bigger than that. So we have a syndicated loans desk where we can lead syndications, some very large syndications. Many of those are for family-owned, privately held companies that have grown substantially past that revenue bandwidth. But then we also have a great and growing small business portfolio, companies that are less than $10 million in revenue. And I think from a differentiation from our competition in the market, Amagi has really, really tried to maintain consistency of approach with our clients over the years, and not take a flavor of the month kind of attitude. We want to be competitive, and we want to earn potential clients' business, and we want to make our existing clients happy through our service level. And there's industry and other challenges to that. Personnel, it's never fun when somebody leaves, but that does happen at times. And I think we have a really unique approach from the executive team all the way down to the baby bankers, I'll call them, on how we try to take care of clients. It's not perfect. We're not perfect, but we work really hard to communicate well, to really take a lot of effort in thoughtful approaches in how we bring value to our clients, and in many cases, sometimes it's just staying out of the way. We chase companies and company owners that are top of their niche or top of their industry, and
we're just there to help. And so sometimes we can offer advice that's really valuable, and sometimes it's them picking up the phone and saying, hey, here's what I need you to do. Can you make this happen? And it's a lot of fun to be able to say yes in those situations.
Okay. Well, that really, I think gives some insight into the types of companies that you play best with or work best with. Well, I guess as we wrap up here, is there anything I didn't ask you that you think needs to be mentioned?
Well, certainly not about the IC disk. I think if the depth of my knowledge around IC disk was tested any further, I'd be exposed.
Okay, fair enough. So I only have one more question for you, and I think this one will be pretty easy for you. What's your contact info, email address, and phone number?
Sure. Happy to share that. That is easy. Thanks for finishing that way. Again, my name is Adam Treweek, and my direct office line is 281-238-7148, and my email address is adam.treweek, T-R-A-W-E-E-K, at amagiebank.com. And for anybody outside of Texas that doesn't know how to spell Amagi, it's A-M-E-G-Y.
Excellent. Yeah, it's kind of one of those made up names. Because I remember when you all rebranded. And I remember one of your colleagues, I was asking about the name, and I remember he said, I know it sounds kind of peculiar, but over time it'll sound very normal. And he was right.
It really has.
So there was one more question I was going to ask you, your contact info. So are you generally amenable? So say some CFO or business owner of a company in the Houston area or even in Texas would like to just call you and just, pick your brain on something. Are you generally amenable to those calls, or do you have a strict screening process that they have to jump through, 10 steps to talk to you on the phone?
No, I'm generally amenable. I try to do a good job of being in my office and returning phone calls within 24 hours if I'm not. But I'd love to talk to people and love to meet new owners, CFOs, people who are curious about ways to add value to their company, and if I can be some small part of that, that's a lot of fun for me. So happy to take any and all comers.
Well, that is great. Well, Adam, I appreciate you spending some time to talk to me on the IC Disk Show, and
Dave,
I hope you have a great.
It was really great. This was a lot of fun.
Well, good. Well, it was fun for me as well. It was fun for me as well. So, well, you have a great day then, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Dave. You too. Take care.
All right. Bye.
There we have it. Another great episode. Thanks for listening in. If you want to continue the conversation, go to icdiskshow.com. That's ICDISCSHOW.com. And we have additional information on the podcast, archived episodes, as well as a button to be a guest. So if you'd like to be a guest, go select that and fill out the information, and we'd love to have you on the show. So that's it. We'll be back next time with another episode of the IC Disk Show.